This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's edition of Eco Radio KC, Zach Pastora, Kansas Sierra Club lobbyist, will speak with Richard Mabian on the environmental issues in front of the Kansas legislature this session. But first, my name is Mike Murphy with the environmental news for this week. Democracy Now! Reports a new study published this week finds that the melting of Greenland's ice sheet may have reached a tipping point and could severely increase sea level rise over the next 20 years. The report confirms other recent studies which warned that the Arctic is warming at twice the rate of the rest of the planet due to climate change. Kansas Sierra Club Waypoints reports, due to the lapse in appropriations for the U.S., the EPA and Department of the Army announced they postponed the public hearing on the proposed new Waters of the United States definition. Information on the status of the public hearing will be posted at www.epa.gov. A report from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, states that startlingly, it was revealed that the world produces more electronic waste every year than the weight of all commercial jet planes ever built. Africa has become a dumping site for e-waste. To address this problem, 10 global companies have pledged to take back the electronic waste that stems from their products. According to Wikipedia, e-waste, or electronic waste, defined as discarded computers, home and office electronic equipment, etc., is created when an electronic product is discarded after the end of its useful life. The rapid expansion of technology means that a very large amount of e-waste is created every minute. Electronic scrap components contain potentially harmful materials such as lead, cadmium, beryllium, or brominated flame retardants. Recycling and disposal of e-waste may involve significant risk to health of people, and care must be taken to avoid unsafe exposure. And the Washington Post reports, scientists say that the temperatures in 2018, the fourth warmest year ever recorded, could be the new normal. And now, here are Richard and Zach.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. Good evening, everyone. This is yours truly, Richard Mabian, and this is probably the show that I love the most, when we're able to get Zach to come on down here from his cubbyhole up there in Topeka and Lawrence and spend some time with us to help us talk about what's going on in Kansas. Zach, how you doing this
evening?
Hey,
really good, Richard, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. One thing about it, there's a lot going on. You know, we were speaking a while ago, we got a new governor.
Right.
Got a new governor. We got a new congresswoman, huh?
That's right.
You know, and for us in the world that we in, this environmental industry, you know, we have a responsibility to introduce these folks to what it is we do and how we go about doing it. And I'm looking forward to it. What's happening with you on your end? Come on.
Well, not just a new congresswoman, which is really exciting, working for us on the federal level, but new governor. But we got quite a few new House
of
Representatives.
That's right. That's right.
And state senators in the area. So, yeah, we'll see how things shake up. But the governor's led with a spirit of bipartisanship, which we especially like. The Kansas Sierra Club has always tried to work for the environment, but try to bring both parties together. We always said that, you know, the environment doesn't discriminate on your political party.
Right.
And so we shouldn't either. Anybody can be an environmental champion. Of course, whether that shakes out. You know, people take political sides on different things, but we've chosen some issues that we feel are unanimous from both parties.
Right.
And, protecting water, having clean air and clean energy, creating green jobs, helping on the climate issue. All this affects all of us.
Tell you what, say people out there listening, you know, when Zach is here, anytime I'm on the show, I like to put the call-in line out there. So if anybody had something they'd like to jump in here with us on to share their opinion or have a comment, you feel free to do so. That number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Because, see, when we're doing what we're doing, we're really sharing this with the people who listen to us. And I always want it to be that way because too many things go on. I'm finding that out this year because of my effort to extend my area of responsibility. I'm becoming I'm trying to be involved with what's going on in Topeka more now because the work I'm doing has evolved to a point that that's my next place of getting some legislative support behind what we're doing too. So come
right.
on, let's.
And I'm glad to hear that, Richard. Yeah. You know, a lot of what we can do to help the environment, you know, some of it stems at the individual level. What right. we can do with our own actions, whether it's taking care of our electronic waste or, you know, plastic that we use, etc. You know, I mean, that's part of it. You've worked at the community level for a long time,
right.
Helping out your community, neighborhoods, and all that, making sure that people are aware of the environmental issues affecting close to home. But then, you know, good part of this is kind of systems level. You know, at the state level, the policies and laws in the state of Kansas, regionally for here for the Midwest, of course, the federal government, United States, and then, you know, with an issue like climate change, you know, that's all of us
right.
here on planet Earth. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'll be seeing you up there in Topeka
a little bit more.
Yeah,
you get to see me some more. Like I said a while ago, I didn't realize that they have a legislative type session thing there daily. There's always something going on where people are coming up and they're addressing in your issues and stuff. And I really hadn't paid that much attention to it before. As you know, I come up there. I've been there for Wealth Day and I've been there for several other days that we've had that would get me there. But now I'm realizing this is a continuous process, man. Continuous.
Yes. And there's a lot of overlapping issues, you know, the Wealth Day, you said, is kind of our environmental
right.
advocacy day.
Right.
March 12th, mark your calendars,
that's
everyone.
Right. Everybody mark your calendar.
You know, also, I think we've kind of realized, and maybe just in recent times more than others, saying that, you know, a healthy society makes for a healthy environment and vice versa.
Right.
A healthy environment makes for a healthy society. So you see folks working in different spheres, whether it's trying to get out the right to vote and
right.
improve our election process to working on public health concerns, you know, overlapping some of those issues with the environment.
Yeah, you just had that one up there that dealt with the utilities and the rates or something.
Yes. Yes, that's a hot topic this
yes,
year in the Kansas State House. And actually this week we'll be getting back into it. A couple of the legislative committees on the Senate side and the House side have explored this increasingly high electricity prices.
Okay.
And I think folks listening may
yes.
resonate with some of those
yes.
high prices. And not if you're a KCBPU customer or if you're a KCPNL customer, you've probably noticed your bills are a little bit higher than maybe what they were 10 years ago,
oh, yeah.
even though you might
oh,
have
yeah.
tried to save
right.
Money on your bill by trying to conserve electricity, et cetera. Well, what we've seen is that in the last 10 years, you know, Westar has received 43 rate increases.
Wow.
Approved by the Regulatory Commission. KCPNL has received 25 in a row in the past 10 years. So, you know, those are you know, almost doubling the amount of your bill.
Right.
So I don't know if people can relate to that, but
the
conversation is our regulatory commission is part of the KCP&L and Westar merger. They've had to come up with a rate study. And they're looking at why has our electricity prices gone up. Kansas has had some of the highest electricity prices of anywhere in the Midwest. And we're above the national average.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all the states combined, California, yeah. New York, yes, yes. You know. And Kansas has higher electricity prices on average than all of them combined. So we need to get a handle of that. If we want businesses coming to Kansas, if we want to keep those folks, the Kansas folks that want to stay in Kansas, maybe folks on low-end or fixed incomes,
right.
We need to make sure that this is a quality place to live, and part of that is keeping our electricity prices low.
So when you had that session, I know you went because you went representing me and also one of my representatives, Pam Curtis. What basically did they – how you summarize it?
Right. Basically, they've said that, you know, they can point to two-thirds of our electricity price increases have come in a couple of different ways. One of them is environmental retrofits of the coal-fired power plants.
Okay,
so keep that in mind. Environmental retrofits, and then also transmission delivery. Transmission is the getting the electricity from the power plant to the consumer.
Okay.
So those two things and a little bit of fuel and purchase power increases were two-thirds of the reason the prices went up. Okay. Well, one thing the Sierra Club is going to have to respond to is that when folks hear environmental retrofits, they point to the environmental guys,
yes.
And the EPA is causing the problem. Well, what we'll say, and it's easy for us to kind of politely say, I told you so, is that we said for the longest time, you know, coal power is dirty and expensive, and because cleaning it up is expensive. And puts pollution in the air, and that's harmful to people's lives, respiratory illnesses, asthma,
right.
Premature heart attacks, and so it is expensive, not just in the social costs, the health costs, but also cleaning up costs money. So, you know, we initially said as Sierra Club that we don't want to put these environmental retrofits on; they're expensive. Why don't we just retire those coal plants early and double down on wind energy, solar, energy storage, and energy efficiency?
Okay, so the retrofits you're talking about is being done to bring those plants up to a standard.
To compliance, yeah.
Yes.
To the Clean Air Act.
Okay.
And it wasn't too long ago that the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, said that we're having too many particulates and harmful emissions going in the air. We're talking about sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxide, and fine particles that get into people's lungs.
Right.
Not even talking about carbon.
Right.
You know, they haven't even started to regulate that. They started talking about that with the Clean Power Plan, but just those and mercury. So those were some of the concerns that the EPA had. They said in a few years, you're going to have to update your coal plants, put scrubbers and high technology on those coal plants if you want to keep them running. Our utilities said coal is a reliable, inexpensive source of electricity. It's going to last us another 20 or 30 years. We're going to invest ratepayer money into updating those coal plants to meet compliance standards. Remember, Sierra Club said no.
Yeah.
Okay, fast forward to today. What we're seeing is those electricity prices have come up because of those expensive retrofits, because, as always, it's more expensive cleaning up after the mess than preventing the mess in the future.
Right.
And so we're going to politely say, hey, we warned you about this, and here we are today. But we have a potential solution on our hands that I'm very excited about, something I think the utilities will buy into and the general public will buy into, the business industry, because it's a sweet spot in saying we'll bring down rates, but we'll also give the utilities a chance to get off the hook with some of these high electric rates, please their customers, but also, you know, return the benefit to their shareholders, their investors, by giving them a chance to take those loans, those bonds they use for the coal plants, retire the coal plant or whatever project is outdated and invest into the new project that'll save us money.
Oh, that's pretty slick.
Yeah. So I think it'll work out pretty good because right now what's keeping the prices high is that we're paying for that coal power and those coal plants. We're only using about half of that coal plant power.
Mm-hmm.
We cycle it down and we use wind that's on the market.
Right.
We use natural gas that's on the market. We only keep those coal plants running about 60% of the time.
Wow.
Okay.
And that's power from Wyoming.
Right.
It's not even talking about natural gas and wind and sun, all the other stuff we can produce, energy conservation that we can produce in-state with our own Kansas jobs.
Well, we at Sierra Club, we had our court settlement that we had with BPU, so I'm a living witness to what had to be done, and they had to invest that money into that scrubber on the other one. But two of those plants, they completely eliminated coal and started using natural gas. Now, and I'm not saying natural gas is the way to go, but it took that coal out of the air and stopped. Yeah. And the young kids in Wyandotte County, in the low-income community, no longer will have coal as one of the reasons for them having asthma. We're going to cut that asthma rate, just if not eliminate it completely, it's going to be reduced to a low amount now in comparison to what we did have.
Right.
So even though natural gas is not the best use of going, it still serves a purpose. Now, the thing that I've gotten, I hear from our Sierra Club, is that they're real pleased with the changes that BPU made because they started investing into wind energy and they invested in, now they got a solar farm out there.
Right.
So that process caused them to start thinking ahead in what we're doing over in that side of town.
If you want to get involved in this conversation, give us a call, 816-931-5534. We'd be glad to put you on the air.
All right, so we got a break coming up here in a second, so give me another highlight of whichever direction you want to go. I'm going to leave it on you and follow.
Why don't we stick with energy just a little bit, and then we'll switch it up at the break. But one of the issues we're facing is that folks that invest in solar,
right,
you know, got solar on the rooftops or want to put it solar. We got solar farm you just mentioned. We've had some issues with the utilities putting extra charge, demand charge on folks with the solar. They say it's a drain on the grid entirely because we got us, you know, there's an argument that, the utilities got to go back and forth with those folks, individual folks that have solar, and they need a little bit more attention, you know, for the grid.
Yeah.
What we say is that, you know, that should be a right for folks. They want to invest their own money and generate their own energy on their own property. They should be able to do so, and especially if they're providing energy that's clean, doesn't require water. It's helping their neighbors and their community out in case the power plant goes down. They got a backup with their solar energy locally. We think that's an option, a good option. Creates jobs. People that got installed the solar on your house, companies want to move in to give folks solar across Kansas. So we wanted to try to see some of that change around the state level.
That's definitely going to be an issue going into this new sessions that we're having in Topeka, because you still have people on the other side that feel that they should have those charges added. So there's going to be some pretty good conversations going on.
Right.
That presentation when you and I sat through this past Saturday with the group that was saying that there's no use, no reason that a person can't do that. You know, that's coming out, Flint Hills? Is that the folks that's doing that? Right.
Right.
And I heard him say that he was up for making presentation to people. To me, it's our responsibility to educate the public. It needs to be more people knowing about this than the people that are in it for their professions. In other words, a legislator, a representative, a senator, the environmental community. We need to figure out ways that we can educate people who live out in these neighborhoods, and hopefully that's something that'll come from these environmental groups, these climate change groups that are starting to form. Hopefully that will be an agenda item for them to find ways to be able to educate the public you know, because I really know that's something we need to do. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start this a minute early. We're going to go ahead and take our break. I'm going to give you the number one more time and would ask you if you want to jump in here with us. That's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
And before we go to break, I just want to quickly say our heart goes out to our brother, fellow Eco Radio KC programmer, Craig Lubo, whose dog Tipper died early this afternoon, I'm just finding out. So I know his dogs mean the world to him. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Craig.
Yes.
And so we'll be back.
You never know what you're going to hear on Radioactive Magazine. We might be discussing racism or climate change or Palestinian rights or a dozen other social justice issues, featuring interviews by activists from ACLU, Indivisible KC, Black Lives Matter, many more. Whatever the topic, we promise a thought-provoking discussion. That's Radioactive Magazine's Tuesday, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
What's that sound, you ask? It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
All right, this is Richard Mabian, and if you want to join this conversation, come on and give us a call. Don't wait until the last minute to do so. 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534.
Bridging an urban-rural divide in the Midwest. On this current cast. When excess fertilizer or manure washes off farm fields, it can contaminate water that supplies nearby cities. But farmers may hesitate to change their ways because it can affect the bottom line. Using less fertilizer can reduce crop yields. And other solutions, such as buffer strips, may require taking land out of production. So the cleanup often falls to cities.
So that sets up the potential for conflict right there.
Michael Taboris of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs says the issue is often approached as us versus them. So to facilitate cooperation, he suggests creating decision-making bodies made up of both urban and rural stakeholders.
To solve it as a collective problem.
Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, we're back. I'm here with Zach, and we're talking about a little environment from a legislative perspective as far as what's going on in Topeka. Let's talk about those groups. Go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about these local leaders that are moving on climate change.
Right, right.
And it's really exciting to see this happening. You know, we got some mayors, some city council, some county commissioners,
right.
All sorts of folks, some staff of these groups, Kansas City. Are all interested in trying to make some progress.
Mark's involved with it. The environmental person for the city's involved with it. So it's a tremendous group of the kind I haven't really seen before. From doing the work that we do, you know, we do brush shoulders with them, but this is not about brushing shoulders with them. This is a group that's actively engaged in wanting to. What's the name of the book again?
Project Drawdown.
Drawdown.
It's a Paul Hawken book, and I recommend it. Get it from your local library, go out and buy it from your local bookstore. It gives you 100 solutions on how to affect the climate. Kind of walks through each idea and how it can be beneficial, and some advantages and even some disadvantages to taking action on those. But they've identified 100 different solutions. They deal with food waste to educating women and to controlling refrigerant. Coolants,
right?
All sorts of stuff.
I just got one and put it on my Kindle, and it cost me $12. But now I got it with me 24/7 because it's here in my book.
A couple weeks ago, when I wasn't here, I went to a local meeting group, a house meeting, and I got a chance to glance at the book. And Stan Slaughter spoke at this event. And there are these events, these meetup groups happening all around town on both sides of the state line. So I got a chance to glance at the book. One thing that, gave me some pause for thought was one of the things they're recommending is nuclear power.
Yeah.
And he did a good job of presenting all sides of that issue, why that's terrifying and why that could be helpful. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, Mike. Number 20 as far as the top 100 solutions is nuclear power. And, you know, there's been some controversy in the past. You know, nuclear plants have cost quite a bit of money up front, infrastructure-wise. It costs a lot of money. Of course, you got the radioactive waste afterwards. Creates its own environmental issue. It's something. But if new technology provides where it doesn't use as much water, it doesn't use, create as much of a radioactive, toxic threat, then potentially there might be some need for nuclear. The way I see it right now, we've done so well with wind and solar and energy conservation. Once we start getting energy storage involved, I really don't think there'll be as big a need for nuclear going forth. But, the energy circumstances is kind of on a case-by-case basis. These are global solutions, and, a place elsewhere that doesn't have the same resources like wind or sun, that might be an option for them. So there are some controversial subjects and we just got to kind of explore those. Mm. But overall, it's some pretty good ideas, I'd say, the book. But what is exciting to me is that, we have the new presidential administration come on. Environmentalists kind of, hung their head and said, well, if we're not going to have as much action on the federal level, we need to step it up at the state level.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, local leaders in that kind of same vein, they realize if we're not seeing as much action on the state level,
mm-hmm.
we need to take it in our own hands in our own local areas, our communities, municipal level, and even counties.
Yeah.
And so, not all these solutions make sense per se, but what's exciting is that these local leaders can pick and choose what does make sense for them.
Mm-hmm.
And one issue that I thought was pretty good was reducing the food waste.
Yeah.
Composting programs. Composting, I see, is that for those that don't do it or are unfamiliar with it, I think it's the next frontier of recycling.
Mm-hmm.
That you can reduce your trash waste by quite a bit because if you look in your trash or you don't compost already, you might see a lot of food type products in your trash can, and those can go and keep them out of the landfills, turn it into new compost for soil, and return it back to the earth in a more eco-friendly way. So that's just one of the issues that I thought was pretty good that I heard a number of cities, communities saying.
Talking about. Well, I was impressed with the group because what they're trying to do is to drawdown has to do with going back to where we were at one time. They're trying to get this, what the advancements we made that's causing all the degradation, they're trying to get us back to where it was at one time without having that as a problem. And I mean, for me and for you and for people like us, we got another entity out here that are joining forces for the survival of the planet and not necessarily the individual environmental workers. You understand what I'm saying? And now they have another group. That's that group that is Climate Council of Greater Kansas City. Now, they just contacted me this morning, so I don't know a whole lot about them, but I'm looking forward to reaching out to them. So if you go with the group that Mike was at their meetings, and you talk about this main one that you and I was at the meeting, and then here's this group, that's a lot of folks out there that's starting to talk in terms of looking at this climate change.
And there was the group, and maybe this is the group you're talking about, but in Prairie Village that, Teresa went and recorded them, like Sly James spoke.
Yes.
Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland.
Yes, that's the
spoke,
one.
Yeah.
That's the one we was at. And that's a powerful group, which made it very important for me, because for this to be effective, it has to be inclusive of all people. And one of the areas that we're missing is the low-income communities. So that opens up another door, and I'm hoping that this group, so far it seems like they're ready to bridge that gap, you know, through an education approach. But finally, someone is looking at it from that perspective. Up to now, the industry really hasn't done anything in the low-income community over saying we got a problem in the low-income community.
One of the things I heard in the recordings that Teresa brought back from that, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was a Kansas state senator out of Manhattan.
Tom Hanks.
Senator Tom Hanks.
Yeah, and so he talked about one of the problems, challenges facing Kansas is that it's, you think of Kansas as a farm state, but 90% of its food comes from outside of the state. Any comments on that while I put this caller on the air?
Yeah, sure. Fruits and vegetables, about 95% of our fruits and vegetables come from out of state. We're a top 10 agriculture state, and beef, swine, wheat, corn, soybeans, and you name it. But when it comes to fruits and vegetables, we're probably bottom 10 as far as producing fruits and vegetables. It didn't always used to be that way in Kansas. And so we're just looking at a sustainable, give farmers another opportunity to grow foods that benefits local people. It's healthy. We need more fruits and vegetables in our diet. Right. So why not grow them here in a place we can grow them, like Kansas?
Right. Well, that was one that we got
have
call.
A caller. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Will you give us your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please?
You're on the air, caller.
Oh, yes, is that me?
Yes.
Yeah. Give us
Chris Allen. Okay. I'm living here at East Bottoms.
Okay. Come on,
Kansas
sir.
City, Missouri.
Come on, sir. What's your question?
I've been homeless now for 3 years, or more about like 10 years. And what can it help to make it cheaper for me to get places to live? Because, well, if I want to get off the streets, I want a cheaper place to live.
Okay. I'm not that knowledgeable about that particular part of our emergency services, but I do know that there are places in town that are. I don't know if you've been in contact with any of the places out there that work to handle those kind of circumstances. By chance, would you be a veteran?
No, I missed Vietnam by 1 year.
Okay, so you need to try to see if you can locate those kind of services that are dealing with them, with those small houses, tiny homes they're building over in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm not for sure if there's a waiting list or how you get involved in it, but I do know there are programs out there that are addressing the kind of circumstance that you have, sir. So if I was you, I would do the best I could to try to see if I can find those programs.
I'm going to do that, too. Now, here's my answer to you, because Mike Murphy and I have worked with Pete Taylor for a long time. He's kept radio station alive, and I've been trying to keep that, too. So if I can learn something, I can help somebody else learn something. Okay. There's a lot of people on the streets. I don't want to be one of those, because I want to be off the streets.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling.
Okay,
we appreciate you.
Thank you.
We do have another caller.
Caller,
you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Vernon Ray. Yeah. I live in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
And I'm a blind person.
Yes, sir.
But I got out to help myself. I don't feel sorry for homeless people. They choose to live that kind of life. And I don't feel sorry for them at all. I'm a blind person. If I can make it, they can make it. You know, they get off their ass and start depending on the government.
Yes,
all
sir.
Right. Thank you, sir.
But you know, and sir, I'm going to address that. I feel you, and you have a right to feel that way. But there are also people that feel there's a need to address that issue. So to make this world go around, it takes all of us to be engaged in it from one perspective or another. But thank you for calling, and you having the guts that you have with your blindness is nothing but a sign of the caliber of people we have living in this country. God bless you, sir. All right, coming back to us now.
It's kind of timely. Appreciate the callers calling in. I think this is kind of a timely topic, is that you were just talking about how we can bridge the gap between, you know, environmental policy ideas and affecting people.
Right.
You know, all sorts of people. People that are most vulnerable, whether they have some specific issue going on with, you know, trying to find housing or a disability or whatever. We need to make these environmental policy upgrades in society work for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Environment for all.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a pretty important thing that we need to realize, that if these changes don't benefit everybody, then maybe we should second guess what we're doing.
Exactly.
And the environment, the environmental movement has got some criticism being maybe too elitist.
Yeah.
And so we need to realize that, you know, that's something I really got into environmental policy because I thought environment connects us all.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I focus in on is individual responsibility. And I think that's what I'm pushing. That's what I'm doing, is trying to create ways so people can have a chance to explore individual responsibility. We think in terms of creating circumstances that is always giving someone something and, you know, giving someone something, and when the money runs out, that program runs out. And because we just giving it, then we leaving people without. And I'm saying we need to find a way to create individual responsibility where you get, let's like the guy said, I'm not going to use your word, sir, but get up off that rear end and get engaged in trying to find a way to create your own independence. And I'm saying that even in the case of the homeless folks, you know, they've given up. They the Department of Labor said we got 52 million people that are just giving up on trying to find work, or they're not bums, they're not worthless individuals. A lot of them are the ones driving around in front of the trash truck every day, grabbing trash and saving it up all week to do whatever they want to do. But they've become disillusioned with the workforce, because the workforce became elitist. The workforce is turned in ways that have been treating people in many cases like slaves, and people have said, I'm not living that way no more. You know, that's why you have that particular portion of the population. Now, everybody might not deal with them, but when you have served the people who live in the communities that I serve, you have people in there like that that are very mindful people that are just giving up and feel that nobody cares. So what we need to do, and that's what I'm working toward, is finding a way to give them people some opportunities that they can be free. You can start an independence business. They can get into recycling. They can find a way to create them an income. Okay, come on with me.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, some of these things are systemic. They're beyond our own individual control.
Right.
And so, you know, that's why it's more important to get involved at the civic level within either locally or at the state level.
Right, right.
Go in and visit with your state legislators. Go up to the state house if you can make it, and let your voice be heard up there. So you're right. You know, we all got to, and especially in the environmental issues, we got to do the best we can individually with those that we know, our peers, our friends and neighbors, our community. But we also need to work on the political process as
yes.
well to get those big changes going on.
Okay, so now you got a list of stuff we talk about. You got water conservation, you got energy, clean energy solution, climate resilience. You even have some here, let's see, oversight, class, disposal, advantage in advancing agriculture. Of those five I just named off, if you had to put your finger on what you would think would be a number one issue to address, which one would you take?
Oh, they're all so good.
I know. That's what
thank
made
you,
it
Richard.
I wasn't going to make it easy.
Hey, Kansas Sierra Club, we got all sorts of good ideas on how to protect the environment. I offer them all up to our legislators because they can pick and choose what they think they like the most, but hopefully we get them all passed. But if I had to narrow it down, I think one thing we can do this year is we can restore some funding for water programs. You know, get the budget in for water. We're lacking about $5 million. I think we can get that. That would go to valuable water programs. The other funding I think we need to get is for disaster response and our emergency services.
Yes.
We've had issues with some of our biggest wildfires in the state of Kansas. Didn't know if it was reported on this program. Sure it was, is that Manhattan, Kansas had a home of K-State Wildcats. They had 9 inches of rain overnight and significant flooding. Folks in Kansas City aren't strangers to flooding problems in the city. At the same time, other parts of the state, we're dealing with the drought. So, you know, having those emergency services there to help help people out in times of need when dealing with climate issues, weather disasters, I think that's pretty important.
Pretty important.
I think it'll be good.
You said also you mentioned water. You said having a water program. What kind of program would you have with water? What's an example?
Yeah, one example is we need to try to get a fund that's established so folks that use a lot of water can pay a little bit into that fund. So that fund can be used for water technology.
Okay.
So, you know, you have the water-saving shower faucets and all that. They have water-saving irrigation technology.
Okay.
They got programs to do conservation buffer strips. So instead of the water going off the end of the field and straight into the water source, the storm water or agricultural runoff that was said earlier in the news, you know, those can be managed by having a buffer strip of tall grass or trees to soak up that water so it doesn't just cave in sediment and pollution straight into the water source.
Okay, we've reached the point for our next break. Again, I'm giving you the number if you're out there and you want to call in, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. We'll be back with you in just a second.
For 25 years, the All Souls Forum has invited the mayor to give a State of the City address. This week, Mayor Sly James gives his final address to the forum. Even in his final days as mayor, James is working down to the wire to push for more funding to support early childhood development. Believing that educating the city's youth is the best way to keep our most valuable resource happy and healthy while making the streets safer and our city more competitive for new business. Join us Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here on 90.1 FM KKFI.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Tom Soto is an investment fund manager, but he took an unusual path to get there.
I was genetically predisposed to being an activist. I was raised by two Latino civil rights leaders. My parents had come from the farm worker and labor rights movement.
As a young adult, he followed in their footsteps and became an activist focused on urban environmental problems. He advocated for clean air and alternatives to dirty diesel buses. But he eventually decided to work for clean air and a healthy climate in a different way.
I've always believed that there are a few areas where one can be effective. One as a community spokesperson or activist. The other would be as a political or an elected official. And then the other area now is the activist investor community.
For about a decade, he's managed private equity funds that invest in clean energy and green building technologies that help reduce carbon pollution. Soto says by funding clean tech innovation, investors can promote a climate-friendly economy. They can also make money while doing good. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, we're back here again, and we're getting toward the end of our program here. But I want to once again throw the number out there for you just in case anybody thought of something while we was on break. 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Okay, Zach.
Yeah, so it's got a lot of ideas. One, a couple more ideas that I think would be great for state of Kansas that we've kind of been discussing but quite haven't pushed over the finish line. A couple things. Kansas is one of the highest food sales tax in the Midwest around. Actually, in the country, I think we're second highest next to maybe Mississippi. But certainly, food is something we all need. It doesn't matter how much money you bring in. food sales tax is, you know, is pretty significant cost to folks. I think in Kansas we have over, I think, $400 million we bring in from sales tax on food. That's $400 million that could be put in the pockets of our Kansas people, that so they can spend it on something else and keep the economy going.
Okay.
That's a big price tag. Kansas Sierra Club is not ready to quite eliminate the food sales tax across the board, but one thing we would like to do is eliminate the sales tax at farmers markets.
Okay,
so farmers markets, if you haven't been there, I'd recommend it. They're Kansas-grown food, local food, or Missouri here, Missouri-grown food, local, by farmers, for the local people. It's a great way that we can have that multiplier effect economically, but not have as big a price tag of reducing food sales tax all across the board. So that's one issue we're pushing this year that I think would have some appeal from all sorts of different folks, both conservative and progressive legislators up there. Another issue that we'd like to push is parks. And outdoor recreation, ecotourism opportunities are something that really benefit Kansans. It's a quality of life sort of thing. We're really blessed to have a different variety of natural resources and environmental-oriented features that our state can show off and even bring others from out of state into to look at, whether it's, the Flint Hills.
Right.
Whether it's, some of our lakes that we have, fishing and hunting is a big outdoor recreation opportunity, bird watching, all sorts of different stuff.
Right.
People can really enjoy it. I think parks, especially in Kansas City area, are pretty special. And we're trying to promote more of that.
More of that being done.
And once you get into nature, you kind of have appreciation for nature. So it affects you back home and your actions, too.
I was in Kansas Day over off of 10th of Quindaryl, and they have that that parallel, I think it's Parkwood Park over there. And we were standing up there in the building looking out all these big glass windows, and it's just a beautiful place, and you realize how, if there was interest really put into this, how valuable that could become for an inner city park. And it should be that way, but it's going to require a total effort from the city to come in and make something like that happen. I think it would be beautiful for people. I saw a lady walking one day, and I worried about her out there walking, but then I looked and she had this big old dog with her, and I said, yeah, that's probably what you would have to be out there. But it's a beautiful trail. You know, it's a fixed finish trail, concrete, and you can walk on it. And I said, oh, this is so cool. You got old elderly people. They need to get out and get some exercise. And this would be a perfect place for them to be able to do that. So I'm hoping what you're saying becomes a reality, because it could. Now, you wasn't going to get out of here without me giving you some controversy.
Okay.
People kind of had a pain in the side when we got our agricultural secretary. And you know yourself that people was going, Zach, what was that about? And you pretty much put people into a, they said, I saw people send you a lot of compliments and thank you for your words of wisdom. So I thought maybe there may be someone out there listening that has that feeling and thought maybe it'd be good for them to hear from the master.
Sure,
yes,
sure.
Sir, come on.
Thanks for bringing this up, Richard. A little context for folks listening is that, the governor appointed a new Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Beam. He's been a lobbyist for the Kansas Livestock Association that's traditionally pushed for large corporate farms, some anti-environmental stances in the past. And what I caution folks is we don't want to jump the gun and arrive to conclusions too quickly here. We want to give him a fresh chance,
right,
to show what he can do to help agriculture, but in a way that's a good steward for the environment. And so I said, hey, let's take it easy. Let's not jump to conclusions. Let's give him a chance to show what he can do, and maybe he can bring the agriculture and the environmental communities together. The spirit of bipartisanship that the governor wants. Ultimately, secretary has a lot of control on agriculture, but his boss is the new governor.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out. But there's a lot of ways we can advance agriculture in Kansas. Local farming, local sustainable agriculture is one way. Commercializing industrial hemp is another way. Take off some of our use of water consumption and pesticides, and a couple other different ways we can get a handle on it. So we shall see.
Yeah, we shall see.
We
just never have enough time when you come on there. We need to have 2 hours, man, because there is so much going on, especially this year. I mean, this is really hot, and so I really appreciate you coming in. You know we're going to have you back.
Always a pleasure.
You don't have to worry about that. I mean, when they get into the thick of stuff up there in this session, we'll have you come in and fill us in on those backroom fights that's going on, okay?
You got it.
Thank you all for listening in, and we'll be here again next Monday. Thank you.
And now the calendar of events for the week of January 28th. February 2nd, community spaghetti lunch at Sunrise Project, 11:30 to 1, or until they run out, located at 1501 Leonard Avenue in Lawrence, Kansas. Find Sunrise Project on Facebook. Also on February 2nd, Electronics Recycling in Parkville, Missouri, from 9 till noon in the parking lot at the Parkville City Hall, 8880 Clark Avenue. See the City of Parkville website for details. Also, February 2nd, 8:30 a.m. till 3 p.m., Cultivate KC's annual Farmers and Friends meeting at the Second Presbyterian Church at 318 East 55th Street in Kansas City. You can meet other urban ag growers and supporters and learn about Cultivate Kansas City's projects over the past year. They're hosting a potluck lunch in addition to the famous pie potluck. A homemade and preferably homegrown or locally sourced dish would be appreciated. To register, visit Cultivate KC. Again, February 2nd, the Lawrence Fruit Tree Project Winter Pruning Workshop from noon to 3 at the Lawrence Community Orchard at 13th Street at Burroughs Creek Trail in Lawrence. You must RSVP with your name and phone number to reserve a place in the workshop by sending an email to lawrencefruittreeproject@gmail.com. More info at lawrencefruittreeproject.org. And on Sunday, February 3rd, the Earth Care Forum 2019 beginning at 9:40 a.m. at First Presbyterian, 2415 Clinton Parkway in Lawrence, Kansas. The topic will be concerning an ordinance limiting single-use plastic in Lawrence, and the presenter is Eco Radio's own Teresa Wilkie. See volunteer events in recycling and tree planting at bridgingthegap.org. These items and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page and at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page.
Good news for an endangered species. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A critical deadline looms for about 40 million people who rely on the Colorado River for drinking water and irrigation. The Bureau of Reclamation has warned the seven basin states that if they cannot reach an agreement by this coming Thursday on how to share looming water shortages, then the federal government will step in and do it for them.
In an interview with the Arizona Daily Star, a water expert warned that if an agreement is not reached, it would mean chaos on the river. With no agreement, the state of Arizona would potentially be the biggest loser, and many farmers south of Phoenix would likely take the largest hit.
The worst case scenario with no deal? Federal authorities could impose conservation plans more draconian than those the states have considered. The other result of no agreement would be uncertainty, which limits water managers' ability to plan.
The main obstacle toward getting a seven-state agreement has been in Arizona, where proposals for a drought contingency plan have to be approved in the legislature.
Last week, there was positive movement by the Central Arizona Project that supports legislation for a drought contingency plan. But as of Friday, no bills had been introduced in the state legislature and no hearings had been set, even though January 31st is coming quickly.
To date, all of the states in the Upper Basin, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Wyoming, have developed contingency plans. In the Lower Basin, Nevada has done so, as has the Southern California Metropolitan Water District. But Arizona and two major water districts in Southern California have not.
Greenland's enormous ice sheet is melting so fast that it may have reached a point of no return, according to a new study.
Ice loss has long been one of the biggest drivers of sea level rise worldwide, but on Greenland, much of that has come from glaciers calving into the Atlantic from the island's southeast and northwest regions.
But as Live Science reports, ice is vanishing four times faster than it was in 2003 on the massive southwest ice sheet that was thought to be more resistant to melting.
According to a team of scientists led by Michael Bevis from The Ohio State University, the loss is partly attributable to a natural weather phenomenon called the North Atlantic Oscillation, which affects air temperature. It's similar to how the El Nino and La Nina weather systems can change water temperatures in the Pacific.
Bevis and his team hypothesized that when the oscillation is in the so-called positive phase, skies above Greenland tend to be cloudy and don't encourage melting. But when it's in a negative phase, warm air gets pulled from the south along the west of Greenland, leading to blue, clear skies that allow more sunlight to reach the ice, causing more melting, which since 2003 has been happening more frequently.
While the Greenland report is bad news for sea level rise, all is not lost, according to a new climate model developed by scientists in Australia and Germany that was funded by the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation's One Earth Initiative.
The model shows that if we transition to 100% renewable energy and protect natural ecosystems, we can have a more stable climate within a single generation, all without using nuclear energy or finding geoengineered ways to suck CO2 out of the atmosphere.
The researchers say nature is key to solving the climate crisis because forests and oceans absorb one half of all CO2 emissions. In addition to switching to renewables, they say we need to keep natural carbon sinks intact by halting deforestation and planting new forests in order to keep global temperature rise below 1.5 degrees Celsius.
New Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has taken steps that The Guardian describes as making him the new champion of the state's waterways and beaches, surprising many.
At his inauguration, the Republican declared the environment would be his top priority, and his agenda would include creating a task force to study solutions for red tide and blue-green algae.
DeSantis has also announced a $2.5 billion project of environmental improvements for the protection of water resources. While his predecessor, Rick Scott, now a U.S. senator, had a long history of taking contributions from the sugar industry, DeSantis refused them and promised to reduce its influence in the state and also its pollutants into waterways.
After water policy managers appointed by the former governor defied DeSantis's plans to send clean water to the Everglades, he asked for their resignations.
While DeSantis had closely aligned himself with Donald Trump, he has said he isn't a climate change denier or believer, but he is creating an Office of Environmental Accountability to be led by a science officer, which may be a first for any state.
And finally, there is more good news from Florida as well as Georgia. Three new right whale calves have been spotted.
The North Atlantic right whale is one of the most endangered species of whales in the world. Manga Bay reports that they were nearly wiped out by centuries of commercial hunting, but then grew to number about 500 in recent decades.
But since 2010, the population has been dropping due to a combination of causes, such as collisions with ships and entanglements in fishnets. Only a few more than 400 are estimated to be alive today.
Last calving season, no new baby whales were confirmed, but during 2017 and 2018, 20 deaths were recorded.
Philip Hamilton of the New England Aquarium told the New York Times that the whales' changing feeding patterns due to warming waters may be affecting their fertility. There's been an increase in the time period between births of baby whales, possibly due to not enough food in order to support the weight a mother needs to calf.
Baby right whales, when born, are about the size of a sedan and put on about 100 pounds a day. Mother and calf usually spend up to a few months in the warmer waters off Florida and Georgia before heading to New England.
The new baby right whales are, according to Hamilton, a spark of hope for the endangered species.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends in technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.